Exodus 20. I'm going to take a detour this week because it is Sanctity of Life Sunday today. Some churches will be remembering it next week because it's closer to the anniversary of the actual Roe v. Wade decision, which I believe was on the 22nd. Next week is the 23rd on your birthday. That's right. So Sanctity of Life Sunday, though, is actually officially today. And I wanted to cover that topic that is significant today. Exodus chapter 20. I read a couple verses for you as before we launch into this. Exodus chapter 20, you're familiar here with what we're looking at, right? If we look in here at Exodus 20, what are we going to see? The Ten Commandments, good. And we reach commandment number 6 in verse 13. Four simple words in the English language here, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill. What does that mean? It means you should not premeditatedly murder an innocent human being. Okay? It doesn't speak against capital punishment. It's not saying you can't go to war. But it is saying that you can't intentionally murder an innocent human being. Now, if you turn over to Ephesians in chapter number 5, Ephesians 5, in verse number 11, the Apostle Paul, writing to the Ephesian church there, and thus by extension, if you will, to our church as well, he says in verse 11 of chapter 5, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Reprove them. What does it mean to reprove? Well, I saw one person quote a different version which highlighted to expose. Well, that's somewhat of a secondary meaning, but the truth is that in order to reprove something, you do have to expose it, right? You have to bring it up, make it evident, and then rebuke it. And so that obviously is the primary concept that there is to reprove it, to rebuke it, if I could use that word. Have you ever heard the pro-life position? Can you state in a sentence the foundational premise or the conclusion of pro-life thinking? You say, well, I'm pro-life. Well, yeah, of course. But could you verbalize it? Can you state in a sentence the foundational premise or the conclusion of pro-life thinking? What is the simple logical argument of the pro-life cause? I mean, there's a lot of ruckus about this subject, isn't there? What is the simple logical argument of the pro-life cause? Here it is. Okay? Premise one, as we stated a moment ago, it is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Are we agreed? It is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Premise number two, abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being. Therefore, the conclusion is abortion is wrong. Very logical, simple statement. Now notice, this is a moral issue before it is a political one. It's become very, very politicized, and yet before we take political sides, let's consider the moral standing of abortion. Is it right? Is it wrong? Now again, here's the basic syllogism. It is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being, therefore abortion is wrong. It's a simple statement. It's a statement of logic. The first statement is innately understood. I don't think there's really an argument there, at least not yet. We could cover more of that later. The first and second, we could say, the first and second premises are scientifically substantiated. Okay? The second, I guess, that abortion actually kills a human being. That is scientifically substantiated. And it is acknowledged even by abortion advocates. They've become more vocal in recent years about what they're actually doing. And so now some see that indeed a life is ending. You might question, well, why are we having a debate then? We could go into that more, though it does, I admit, seem a little dystopian that we actually have to have a discussion about the legality of killing innocent human beings. In our allegedly advanced society, how is it that we murder millions of our own citizens? How is that happening? Well, in fact, according to an article by Human Life International, historians list 34 genocides that took place during the bloodiest century in the history of the world. That was the 20th century, the 1900s. If it were ranked as the executor and enabler of a genocide of preborn children, Planned Parenthood would rank fourth among genocides, behind only Mao Zedong's 60 million, Joseph Stalin's 40 million, and Adolf Hitler's 30 million, and ranking far ahead of Pol Pot, Kim Il-sung, Idi Amin, and Benito Mussolini. Wow. Further, Planned Parenthood's legion of abortionists have killed a number of children equal to the population of the entire state of New Jersey, or the entire state of Virginia, or the entire population of New York City. Now, could you imagine? And if you're a homebody and you've only ever been in Clark County, maybe New York City is kind of like a mystery in some ways to you. But if you have some concept of the millions of people that are stuffed into New York City, the five boroughs of New York City, and then imagine that you're traveling along and you get to the sign that says "Welcome to New York City," and you walk in and it's a ghost town. It's absolutely empty, not a soul in any of the high-rises, in any of the buildings, in any of the business complexes of Manhattan. You drive up and down the streets, and there's not a soul. And then imagine that that many people have been wiped out due to the efforts and the activity simply of Planned Parenthood. And I'm going to tell you in a moment that Planned Parenthood isn't the only executioner in the United States, though they are the main one. How has this happened? Well, first I wanted to mention to you, talk to you about the power of words. The power of words. In 1971, and this was 2 years before the legalization of abortion under Roe v. Wade, one pro-abortion advocate, according to Randy Alcorn in his book, Why Pro-Life, he's quoting Leonid Tanner here, who is a pro-abortion, he calls him pro-choice, advocate. He instructed nurses in a prominent medical journal. Here's what he said, quote, "Through public conditioning, use of language, concepts, and laws, the idea of abortion can be separated from the idea of killing." How have we gotten to a place where we kill millions of our own citizens, innocent babies? Well, in part, it is because of the power of words. Language, we know scripturally, expresses the thoughts of our hearts, right? But in an interesting turn, language also conditions our thinking as well. Hence the reason there are spin doctors, right? It's the way that you say something. It's the word that you choose. It's the way that you craft a sentence that helps condition the thinking of other people. Along this line, I'm wondering about your opinion here. Why do you think we call it a fetus? Why do you think it is called a fetus? Okay, very good. Fetus is Latin. I agree with Rick's perception there. Now you say, well, it's a medical term and other medical terms are Latin. Okay, but I tend to think that when you use a Latin term, it's a foreign word and its definition is unknown, and so thus it can be obscured and kind of stuffed with another definition through public re-education, if you will. Fetus actually means offspring, young one, can even mean little child. So that doesn't really help the argument, does it? But it just sounds more obscure to say, well, it's not a baby, it's a fetus, even if we're saying the same thing, because it's kind of an unknown term. So we need to consider the importance of defining terms and clarifying the discussion. Scott Klusendorf makes the point that the question which should trump all others in this debate, though we understand there shouldn't really be a debate, but once you understand, but before that, you say the question that should trump all others in this debate about abortion or life is this: what is it? What is it? If that thing inside the woman is just a blob of tissue, why then she has the right to get it out of her body and more power to her, right? If it's just a blob of tissue. But if that thing is a human being, then the entire conversation changes. So the primary question we have to ask is, what is it? Consider this example as we're talking about clarifying terms or the importance of words. Consider this example directly from the website of the Despicable Planned Parenthood. In the section titled, "What Facts About Abortion Do I Need to Know?" What facts about abortion do I need to know? A brief synopsis of a medical abortion is given. Note the wording. Quote, "A doctor or nurse uses medical instruments and gentle suction to remove the pregnancy from your uterus." Does that sound a little odd to you, to remove a pregnancy from your uterus? Yeah, we don't really state it that way. But obviously, you have to work around what is being removed from the uterus. So they say it removes the pregnancy from the uterus. It's also interesting to note what facts they deem that a person considering abortion should know. They answer four main questions. On that same page, I believe, when it says, "What facts about abortion do I need to know?" They say, one, they answer these questions. What are the different kinds of abortion? They call them in clinic and medication. Number two, is abortion safe? Number three, how will I feel after having an abortion? And number four, will an abortion affect my health? Is there a glaring absence? Is there any other important detail which a mother should consider and might want to know about this procedure called abortion? How about this, that it intentionally destroys an innocent human baby? Would that be important to know? Well, not according to the Planned Parenthood, because you don't really need to know that. They've told you what you need to know. It's important, then, that we frame the discussion appropriately. Every person who has an abortion is a mother. We're not simply talking about a woman's choice to do what she wants with her body. We're debating a mother's choice, specifically the choice to intentionally end the life of her baby. So when we frame the discussion accurately, we talk about a mother and her baby, not a woman and her body. Okay? So let's frame the conversation properly. But then you think about the effect of misdirection. Now, how many of you like, and I'll call them this, some people may not like the word magician, but an illusionist. Have you watched an illusionist before? Wow, how does he, oh my goodness, right in front of my, he made it disappear, he made it reappear, he did amazing things. Do you know what a large component, we might even say especially of up-close illusions are? Do you know what a significant component of what they do is? It's called misdirection. They get you to focus on and look at something over here while they're doing something else over here. And they're one step or two or three steps ahead of you, and you don't notice what they're doing because you're focused on something else, and they want you to focus on something else. It's called misdirection. So we have to keep focused in our discussions about these things, especially of such importance, on the main thing. Keep focused on the main thing. What is it? That's our main primary question. What is it? What is that in the mother's, as we often say, tummy, in her uterus? Considering, again, some information offered by Planned Parenthood, we define the question. Let me pull this up, this article here. I was looking directly on their website. Go to my note on this here. All right. So their article, "Should I Get an Abortion?" Okay. And here's what they say. Everyone has, well, actually, I'm going to read you some more information. They say abortion is very common. People have abortions for many different reasons. only you know what's best for you. Now, is that true? Only you know what is best for you. No, that's just arrogant, because honestly, what kind of conventional wisdom is that to say to a child or a young person, you know what's best for you in every situation of life? I mean, why do you have a mom and a dad? And why are you going to college? I mean, you know what's best, right? No, of course not. But only you know what's best for you. We have to condition you to believe that you're the only one that can make this decision with our guidance, of course, with our guidance, because we care about you and we know what's best. But you know what's best. Only you know what's best for you, but good information and support can really help you make the decision that is best for your own health and well-being. Why do people decide to have an abortion? If you're thinking about having an abortion, you're not alone. Millions of people face unplanned pregnancies every year, and about 4 out of 10 of them decide to get an abortion. Some people with planned pregnancies also get abortions because of health or safety reasons, and so they go on and try to give some stats to say, look, you know, it's really a pretty common thing. Sometimes the decision is simple. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you don't really know what you're talking about, it's pretty simple. Other times it's complicated. But either way, the decision to have an abortion is personal. It's personal. And you're the only one who can make it. Now, is that a true statement? Well, technically, yeah. You are the only one that can make it. Doesn't mean it's right, but you're the only one that can make the decision. Everyone has their own unique and valid reasons for having an abortion. Now, they've already framed the argument, because any reason is a valid reason. Whyever you want to do it is valid. It's your reason, it's your choice, and you're the best one to make that choice, okay? So they've already said that any reason's a valid reason. Now, some of the many different reasons people decide to end a pregnancy include, and here's the list. They want to be the best parent possible to the kids they already have. They're not ready to be a parent yet. It's not a good time in their life to have a baby. They want to finish school, focus on work, or achieve other goals before having a baby. They're not in a relationship with someone they want to have a baby with. They're in an abusive relationship or were sexually assaulted. The pregnancy is dangerous or bad for their health. The fetus won't survive the pregnancy or will suffer after birth. Okay? They just don't want to be a parent. Okay? Those are reasons why people get an abortion. That's on Planned Parenthood's website here. Deciding to have an abortion doesn't mean you don't want or love children. Okay? As long as we haven't really defined what it is, as long as it's kind of obscure what we're dealing with here, and we can try to salve our emotions without really speaking in very concrete terms, we can believe that we actually love children. And then before I go on to that, so we ask the question, we stay focused on the main thing, and we say, but what is it? What is it? And when we scientifically, logically, and scripturally, you don't even have to go to scripture to make the point, but you can. You scientifically, logically, and scripturally, all of them are on your side, clearly demonstrate that what is inside the mother, inside her uterus, is a living human being. Yeah, you answer that question, and now we go back to the reasons that people have an abortion and see if that makes sense. So I'm going to insert what abortion is now after the reason for having an abortion. So some of the many different reasons people decide to end a pregnancy, not kill a child, but end a pregnancy, include they want to be the best parent possible to the kids they already have, so they'll kill the kid that they have now. Okay? Or they're not ready to be a parent yet, so they'll just kill the baby. It's not a good time in their life to have a baby, so we'll just kill it. Have you ever felt after 2 years after they're born that it's maybe not a great time to have a baby? Okay? That you're a little stressed and you're under duress and things aren't going the way you want to? They want to finish school, focus on work, or achieve other goals before having a baby, so they'll just commit murder now. They're not in a relationship with someone they want to have a baby with, so they'll kill the baby. and maybe stay in the relationship. They're in an abusive relation or were sexually assaulted, so we'll kill the baby. The pregnancy is dangerous or bad for their health, which, by the way, can be disproved, so we kill the baby. The fetus won't survive the pregnancy or will suffer after birth, so we'll kill it. They just don't want to be a parent, so we'll kill the kid. Now, does that kind of seem to frame it in a different way, that if you put it that way and you made it very obvious what it is, that a lot of young ladies are going to sit there and they're probably going to get wide-eyed and think, oh my goodness, I can't do that. That would be wrong. But we don't want them to think that it's wrong. At least Planned Parenthood doesn't. So let's talk about only the facts, okay? And of course, Planned Parenthood isn't so concerned about that. And I want you to notice how they poison the well. You understand what I mean by poisoning the well. You're going to distort in someone's mind the perspective against another source before they ever get there, okay? So that they won't go to that source. And I want you to notice what they say. Reading the article was somewhat enraging to me. In the section entitled, Who Can I Talk With About Getting an Abortion? Who can I talk with about getting an abortion? They say this, quote, lots of people lean on others to help them with their decision. It's good to choose people who you know are understanding and supportive of you. Your local Planned Parenthood Health Center has caring professionals that can answer any questions you may have. They'll give you expert care, accurate information, and about all your options, and non-judgmental support along the way, no matter what you decide about your pregnancy. Other family planning centers and private doctors may also talk with you about your decision, but be careful when looking for a reliable health center because there are fake clinics out there that claim to offer information about pregnancy options and abortion. They're called crisis pregnancy centers, and they're run by people who don't believe in giving you honest facts about abortion, pregnancy, and birth control. Wow. Crisis pregnancy centers are often located very close to Planned Parenthood health centers or other real medical centers. This is a quote. And have similar names. They do this to confuse people and trick them into visiting them instead. No one should pressure you into making any decision about your pregnancy, no matter what. Though testimony from people who have worked in Planned Parenthood clinics say that they actually have quotas on abortion. And there's a culture of, if you will, salesmanship to have to meet a quota. But never mind that. No, because they have accurate information and they don't want to pressure you no matter what. Okay? Now, I'm going to read you a statistic in a minute and you tell me if there's any pressure involved. So it's important to get the info and support you need from people who give you the real facts and won't judge you, okay? Because it's about finding non-judgmental support, which means that you're only looking for support that agrees with you, okay? That wouldn't demonstrate how bad one of the options would be, because that would kind of seem judgmental. We understand what judgmental is, but the way that they're going to use it is, you know, you need people who are going to support you in your decision. The role of emotions and opinions. Here's a common argument, basically. You can't weigh in on this discussion because you're a man. You don't know what it feels like to be pregnant. You're not even a woman, so don't weigh in on this decision of a woman. Now, that kind of passes over the fact that the pro-life movement is led by women, and there are probably thousands, if not tens of thousands, of women who would speak out against abortion. So that basically falls flat on its face because it's saying you can't speak on it if you're a man. Well, what about if you're a woman? Okay, then I think that the argument changes a little. Probably something more like this. You can't tell me what's right for me. It's a personal choice. So the man thing has nothing to do with it. It's that ultimately, don't tell me what to do. You can't tell me that I'm wrong. I'll use your gender, but when that doesn't work, I'm just going to retreat in the fact that it's a personal choice. So let's talk about reality and facts. Even abortionists agree that abortion ends a life. So what do we say about that? Well, they say, my body, my choice. My body, my choice. Does that bear out in the rest of life? You know, when you have a baby, can you just, at 2 weeks old go, man, I'm getting tired. You know, this thing's not letting me sleep at night. It's constantly wanting to be fed. It's just a big drain on me. I'm just gonna set it out on the front porch and lock the door and go on vacation. I mean, because it's my body, right? Obviously, I can make a choice what to do with my own body. That thing can't require me to feed it, right? Because it's my body. No, you'd be arrested and put in prison. Because we, even as a society, recognize that there are obligations upon you to protect your offspring and the innocent and indefensible and needy among us, right? You're not allowed to put a child in endangerment. You're not allowed to neglect a child. You're not allowed to do those things. So we don't even believe that you're allowed to do everything you want with your own body. Now, I told my wife, I came really close. I'm not a Facebooker, really. But I came really, really close yesterday to posting something. And I was like, whoa. I had to think over it and, you know, breathe deep. And I decided not to do it because I thought, you know, it's going to come across wrong. As a kind of a cold logician, sometimes you're looking for the facts. It may come across as unfeeling and cold. But my argument, my question was this, okay? And I think it's a fair one, though. And understand, we're going to come around in this lesson with the time that we have to a conclusion that is compassionate. But we're laying the facts here, and we're talking about the arguments, and it's touted so much, my body, my choice. And to read it specifically for you, here's what I felt like posting and the question I would like to ask. Honest question to any pro-choice advocates. If a woman can justify abortion by claiming a right to use her body as she wishes, can a man justify rape by claiming the right to use his body as he wishes? It's my body. I can do what I want. In either case, aren't we overlooking the right of the person being harmed? In other words, it brings about the issue that your right to choose ends at someone else's right of protection and of your right of obligation. When I enter into certain roles and places in life, I have an obligation. I don't have a right to do whatever I want with my body, okay? And so that argument really is just a kind of a pathetic, shallow, meaningless statement. There is biblically such a thing as parental responsibility. Moms and dads have roles. In fact, speaking about widows in 1 Timothy 5:8, he says, if any man provide not for his own, especially for them of his own household, he's worse than an infidel. God took it very seriously that we provide for our own to the best of our ability, right? So we can't truly just do whatever we want with our body. Furthermore, the baby is not your body. The baby is not your body. They say, well, if I want to chop off, or they might could make the argument, if I wanted to chop off my arm, that's a personal decision. It's my body. I can do with it what I want. But your arm has the same genetic code that the rest of you does. In fact, it is your arm because of the genetic code that you have in you. However, that baby residing in you has a completely unique and independent genetic code. It is a different human being. And you say, well, how do you know that it's human? What else would it be? It's called biogenesis, I think, where like begets like, OK? Okay, watermelons propagate watermelons, and kangaroos propagate kangaroos, and humans propagate humans. What else would it be? Has there ever been an instance where a woman's gone through childbirth and had a cantaloupe, right? Or an emu? No, it's always a human being. Isn't that odd? And yet, at what point did it become the human being? You have to understand that an embryo does not become a human being. It is a human being. You were an embryo. An embryo didn't become you. You were an embryo. And if they retreat so far, as I imagine some will in a postmodern society, to deny truth. And remember what truth is? Truth is reality. Okay, an absolute objective reality. So if you go so far as to deny reality, deny truth, you have no argument at all. That hasn't helped your cause, because now what you're saying makes no sense in any sphere. Now I want to, as we start heading towards a close here, ask the unasked questions. Who is Planned Parenthood? Who is Planned Parenthood? According to an article at HLI.org, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, note of America, is one of 134 member associations of the gigantic International Planned Parenthood Federation, which works in 142 nations on every continent. It joins two other multinational non-governmental organizations that do the most damage to faith, life, and family in the world: the United Nations Population Fund, the architect and supporter of the Chinese forced abortion program, and the Population Council, founded and supported by eugenicists, now serving as the guiding hand behind population suppression efforts all over the world. Okay, so this is the American arm, essentially, of the eugenics movement, the international eugenics movement. Now, Planned Parenthood, while they purport that, quote, abortions are only 3% of the services we provide, are really being deceptive in the way that they try to present that information by unbundling the things that they do. Taken from an article here, Planned Parenthood apparently is up to 354,871 abortions performed per year. Now, what's more helpful to realize is that 96.9% of pregnant Planned Parenthood clients get abortions. So you're pregnant, you go to Planned Parenthood to get advice, counsel, and they're going to tell you all your options without any pressure whatsoever. And they're going to give you accurate information, unlike those fake crisis pregnancy centers. And they're going to speak to you in clear terms, except they're not going to mention life or death or killing or murder. And somehow 96.9% of the clients choose to get an abortion. Okay? 40% of the U.S. abortion market is accomplished by Planned Parenthood. So, to tell you the other part, so you say 96.9% of women seeking help from Planned Parenthood get an abortion, only 0.7% get adoption referrals, and 2.4% get prenatal care of any kind. But 3%, you know, that's only 3% of what we provide is abortions. No. Not when you realize that they're essentially unbundling a lot of their practices by saying, well, we did this test and this test and this test and this test and this test, though many of those tests were done on the very ladies who had abortions. It's probably part of the process. So when you bundle them together, it looks a bit different. Much more could be said. We have a few minutes left, so I want to go into this quickly, asking the unasked questions. On what basis are we permitted to kill the unborn? Okay, because we established that indeed it is a life, it's a unique DNA structure, it is a human bearing a human, It is a life, and abortion would intentionally kill the unborn. So on what basis, then, are we permitted to kill the unborn? Now, here's a few of the differences that might be highlighted. Well, their size. They're so small, right? Which obviously means that, you know, because we all know that smaller people have less human rights than bigger people. No, we don't believe that at all. Well, maybe level of development, you know, because, I mean, they're not even developed into a normal baby yet, right? I mean, you can sort of see their shape, but they're not even hardly developed into what we would expect. They're exactly the size and shape they ought to be for their age. Just like I would look at a 3-year-old and not expect a 40-year-old body. They're exactly the size and shape and development that they should be for that age, right? And we wouldn't say because they haven't gone through puberty yet that we should destroy them or give them less human rights. In the same way, just because they're not developed completely in the womb doesn't mean that they should be murdered. How about environment or location? Do you have more human rights, say, in a city park than you do in a building? No. So what does it matter whether it's inside the womb or outside the womb? Why does it get full human rights 2 minutes after it's born, but 2 minutes before it's born, it's subject to abortion? That doesn't make sense, does it? How about dependency? It's dependent on me, and so thus I have the right. How long is that child dependent on you? Once it's born, is it fully independent? I say not, right? About 42 years, right? Is that how long they're dependent? Oh, okay. Anyway, we could debate that. But other arbitrary standards. I asked early on in the lesson, brought this up, say, well, even abortionists claim that the act ends a life, well, what's the argument left then? Well, to some, the argument shifts to personhood. It is human it's a human being, but it's not a person yet. Okay. Well, what defines personhood? Well, let's provide some arbitrary standards for that, you know, because we know what's best. And how about self-consciousness? Okay. Because they're not even self-conscious. And we know that because, chirp, 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 chirp. I don't know, maybe because they don't have a brain yet, right? In the early days, that the brain's not developed. So they don't have a self-consciousness. And so therefore, obviously, if someone's not self-conscious, then they could be murdered, right? Like somebody in a coma or somebody in a deep sleep. Well, that doesn't make sense either, does it? They can't even feel pain. What does that have to do with anything? Do we have human rights that vary according to our pain tolerance? No. So none of these really measure up to an adequate basis whereby we're permitted to kill the unborn. We're not, because it's morally wrong to innocently kill, intentionally kill an innocent human being. So what would prevent so many abortions? Well, many things, but if we started to build a case, would it be just teaching about abortion? Well, honestly, that would go a long way, especially when you begin to use imagery and you take it out of the vague, nebulous terms that are used, like ending a pregnancy or a fetus or whatever, and we begin to show pictures or even describe the process, how it happens. We begin to quote abortion doctors as they're teaching others how to do it, that you insert the forceps, you crush the skull, and you pour. If you begin to describe it for even high school age children, do you think it'll change? Yes, I think it would make a big difference. In our homes, of course, we'd want to teach chastity, purity, be an example of the believer in purity. Romans 1:29 talks about sinful mankind, and 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee fornication. Flee fornication. That should be a teaching. And yet that teaching may be included in some homes or at least in some churches, and yet you still see kids who get an abortion. Why? Well, it could be because of a lack of protection from evil influences. There's no guardrails on technology or exposure, or they're put into an environment where this is pumped into them and they're not being properly fortified at home. And dad is never saying, "My son or my daughter, give me thine heart," not training up a child in the way it should go. Furthermore, they're not going to accept that teaching if there's not an acceptance or a genuine relationship bond between a father figure, a man of integrity, and his daughter. Yeah, he can yell and scream at her and talk about our family doesn't do that, and then go off and work his overtime and leave her to her friends and her school and her technology, and those lessons may very well go unheeded. But then, more than just having a good relationship with his daughter, maybe there ought to be an example and a teaching of submission to God. Teaching your kids that the Bible is the authority, that it's important to know God. In fact, it's the all-important, it's the most important thing. Maybe we ought to show that by our very example, that the kids get up and they see mom or dad reading or praying. They know that that's a real part of our lives. And that we demonstrate a love of his law or of his design. Psalm 119:97, "Oh, how love I thy law, it is my meditation all the day." Are they seeing that in the home? Or is that too high of a price to pay to try to curb those decisions, even in our homes, in our churches, and in our nation? Lastly, somebody mentioned something like this. I think it's a good point. They don't need excuses. That is, those who are seeking abortions, they don't need excuses. They need an exchange. And maybe more so, I should say, the folks that have already gotten an abortion. They need an exchange of Christ's righteousness for their sinfulness. So if it sounds like we're speaking down the nose and we're driving somebody into the ground, and if you've ever done this, you've passed the point of no return and you're a murderer, well, there is something to admitting to what actually happened. Okay? When Paul could recognize that I was the chief among sinners and that I was this, and David could recognize his own sin before the Lord. But then we need to bring about the fact that there's forgiveness and hope, and that can only be offered through the work of Jesus Christ on the cross and through the grave. Their guilt can die with him, and their joy can live with him. A young mother who has been pressured into being an accomplice to murder can still grow to be a godly, joyful mother who makes an impact for God on the next generation. It doesn't have to weigh down the rest of her life. She doesn't have to live under the stigma of that. And if we think that there's not a mental weight that follows abortion, we're wrong. They can say, most people, you know, their bleeding stops in a few days, they can go back to work, and they can have kids down the road, and they're fine. A lot of people have abortions. They're lying to you if they make you think that it just goes on and that women don't live with that for years. So certainly there is a lying and deception and error going around, and we need to teach, not that we'll be non-judgmental and say, well, you know, that's a personal choice, but rather we'll say what it is, we'll be truthful, and we'll lead them to the place of guidance, wisdom, and if it's already been accomplished, forgiveness and hope, which is found in the Scripture.